As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the winter's bestseller pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Ultimately, who closed this deal was three real estate developers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of crazy.
The trajectory is really interesting. Like, a New York real estate mogul just like brokered world peace. And I saw a bunch of like memes going around just like at this time last year, Donald Trump was serving fries at McDonald's.
Yes,
and now he's like traveling
campaign.
Around the world, like shutting down wars. That's quite an upward trajectory he's taken.
Welcome to Rivera and Rees, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Rees. I'm Masidi, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Girl, the president got in yesterday at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was tired from just watching him yesterday, exhausted. And then I went to bed. I swear, I got into bed at like 8:30. I go, man, it must be so late. And Sean said, no, it's not even 9 yet. And I was just tired from watching what the president did. And then when I woke up around 5:30, I realized he got in several hours before I woke up, probably slept maybe like 45 minutes or an hour, because I hear he was taking calls after he left Egypt. The man is a machine. He is a
machine. I don't know. And I mean, he did this whole...
He looked tired though. Did you see him?
He did. Yes.
He did. And he rarely looks tired to me, but I was like, this poor guy.
I think it's fair to be tired. He
yes.
literally just flew across the country, mm-hmm. signed a peace deal, met with people. I'm sure it was exciting and emotionally draining also at the same time
right.
to then fly back. And also he was flying back because he wanted to make it, because today is Charlie Kirk's birthday today. But today he is also giving Charlie Kirk posthumously, obviously, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And yeah. I think that's at like a 2 o'clock
Four.
Today?
4 o'clock Four. Is what I heard. And Erica Kirk will be receiving it on his behalf.
Yeah. So he, because this wasn't exactly planned way ahead of time. Remember that he right. was, he got slipped the note by Marco Rubio about the deal. Mm-hmm. When was it, like on Wednesday or
last
something
week.
Like that?
Yeah.
Last
yeah.
week. And then by Thursday, by Friday or Saturday, he's flying to Israel.
I know.
I can't even imagine. So, but before we get started, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button on whatever platform you're watching, because now we are also on YouTube Woo-hoo. As well as Substack. So you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you want to become a paying supporter on our Substack, there's a link in the show notes for you. You get ad-free episodes, you get your episodes early, and you also get a bonus episode once a month, which actually we're due for one.
Yeah.
It's October. Yeah, we need to get one done. So if you want that, I suggest you hit that link in the show notes. Also, if you are an existing supporter and you've been on the fence about joining either my Substack or Rachel's Substack, hit us a DM on Instagram or Substack and we will send you an exclusive discount code to join either one of our Substacks. You don't have to join both of them. You just, you know, you'd be like, hey, what's up? I want to support you also on your personal Substack. All right, let's get into today's episode because it's a lot. There's yesterday a lot. Was a lot. Of course, the big story yesterday was the release, not just the Gaza peace deal, Gaza-Israel peace deal, but also the release of 20 hostages. There was also 4 deceased hostages that were exchanged. Mm-hmm. Also, the president flew to Israel to address the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, and then also to Egypt to sign the peace deal with Turkey, Qatar, and is it Saudi Arabia that also was there? I can't remember which. It was Turkey, Egypt, and Qatar. Jeez. Mm-hmm. So he had a full day to then fly back, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to go ahead. I want to play some clips here just so you can hear the president speak at the Knesset, also Bibi giving thanks. I'm gonna play a few clips to get a feel of what was happening yesterday while Trump was addressing the Israeli parliament.
President, Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, esteemed members of the Knesset and cherished citizens of Israel, we gather on a day of profound joy, of soaring hope, of renewed faith, and above all, a day to give our deepest thanks to the Almighty God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. After 2 harrowing years in darkness and captivity, 20 courageous hostages are returning to the glorious embrace of their families, and it is glorious. 28 more precious loved ones are coming home at last to rest in this sacred soil for all of time. And after so many years of unceasing war and endless danger, today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity.
I want to go ahead and share Bibi also, which he addressed the parliament and spoke on Trump before Trump spoke.
2 months ago, you fully backed my decision to send the IDF into the last Hamas stronghold in Gaza City. You shared my view that this military pressure would help free the hostages. And despite all the criticism, all the naysayers, we were right. Hamas caved in. And 2 weeks ago, you succeeded in doing something miraculous. You succeeded in doing something that no one believed was possible. You brought most of the Arab world. You brought most of the world behind your proposal to free the hostages and end the war. I want to thank Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, and Ron Dermer for their great contribution to...
So I wanted to play those 2 clips because I thought it would set the stage of what exactly happened. And of course, we are going to talk about the hostages because I have clips about the hostages. I just don't want to get emotional right off the top of the episode. And I think it's really interesting because we have to like remember the context of how everything happened, because I don't know what was it like a week or two before this happened, you had other EU leaders and Canada coming out publicly and making statements to identify Palestine as a state, which was, I think it was Marco Rubio that mentioned how that initially could have derailed and really caused some challenges in trying to reach a peace deal a ceasefire, however you want to categorize it, because by them acknowledging Palestine as a state, kind of giving a little bit of a wink, they, you know, is perceived to Hamas, like Hamas feeling like, well, now we have a little bit of leverage. We maybe have some support. Is it really necessary for us to, like, because it's always like honestly, most of this war, a lot of it has been a propaganda war. So mm-hmm. it's like, if we have the support, is it really to our benefit right now to sign a peace deal?
Mm-hmm.
And even with all of that, like, this is where we are yesterday.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. In fact, it's absolutely remarkable. And it was, and I'm sure we'll get to this at some point, but it should be noticed how Trump was received when he showed up and walked in. I mean, the people didn't stop clapping. And I listened to several people speak yesterday who were there and just said, you almost got tired of clapping, but you couldn't stop because it was such an impactful moment. And then to kind of contrast that with some of the reception that Trump's getting here, or complete lack of reception and yeah. lack of applause, a lack of even recognition for what he managed to pull off. In fact, they're running the opposite direction, saying, well, this actually, Biden was the actual peace president. He got out more hostages. He was the one who did all the work. I think that that was what I noticed right away at the beginning, just seeing their overwhelming support for Donald Trump from Israelis, and then watching the reaction here at home. It's yeah, totally different.
It's been completely different. Actually, I have this little video here. If you guys, whoever's watching this, I'm showing what was the beach in Israel with a big sign of thank you with Trump's image.
So oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So he would see the message when he was coming in on Air Force One. So the reports are that the plane actually flew, did like a low fly so they could see this message to the president as he was flying in.
Wow.
Which is kind of crazy if you mm-hmm. really think about it. And by all reports, he was very well received. There was even people in, I guess, versions of MAGA hats that said mm-hmm. the peace president or mm-hmm. make peace great again or something yeah. like that on the hats in the parliament.
Yes. And they were like, not having, there was, I think, like two.
Yeah, I was about to mention lefty, that.
Like protesters. And they shut it down real quick. I think they were holding up like little signs or something.
They were holding up some signs, and it was about, you know, the Palestinian state and how this basically in opposition because this agreement hasn't definitively acknowledged Palestine as a state.
And they just threw them out. They were like, get out, bye. We're not having any time for this. Even Trump was like, well, immediately that was gone. Trump was impressed by the efficiency.
Well, I was actually, so when you and I texted you, and obviously we're in the very beginning phase, and the phase one was for Israel to pull back to a line to, you know, to allow, and obviously the ceasefire to allow the exchange of hostages, mm-hmm. what the Palestinians were categorizing as hostages, which are detainees and also tried terrorists, and all, for exchange of the Israeli hostages. Mm-hmm. So we got back, or I'm sorry, Israel got back 20 hostages, live hostages, mm-hmm. and the Palestinians in exchange got 250 tried criminals and then 1,700 detainees.
Think about that. Think about how bonkers that is, that it's so obviously not even remotely I don't know what word you fair, but just that this is what we're dealing with, that you have to make a swap like that.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. I was thinking more about, we don't know the details yet of exactly how this entire peace deal went down.
Mm-hmm.
Even Rubio shared yesterday on his post, I have the post here, I think, or did it? Yeah, where he said, some serve a lifetime in public office and never experience a day like today. In time, history will detail the full story of how today was made possible. But for now, all Americans should at least know this, that today would not have happened without POTUS, without the president, doing some pretty extraordinary things. And one of the only things that I've heard in regards to this peace deal and how it worked out is an exclusive scoop from Axios, where they reported that on Wednesday night, so think about it, Trump did that Antifa
round table.
I think it was on, it may have been on Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not 100% sure. Also, the time difference would matter here. But the reports are on Wednesday night at 11 p.m. at the Four Seasons Resort in Egypt. There was a 45-minute meeting, and Trump approved a meeting the day before in the Oval Office, giving envoys Witkoff and Kushner authority to meet with Hamas directly. So the reports are that negotiations and intermediaries were, of course, Qatar and Egypt, and that they reached out and they were like, we think if you can bring Witkoff and Kushner here or some representatives here to speak with Hamas leadership directly, that we might be able to get a deal. And so it was then that they flew out, they had a meeting, and managed to somehow negotiate a deal. When I asked for Trump's message, there is a quote here. It says, President Trump's message is that you will be treated fairly and that he stands behind all 20 points of his peace plan and will make sure they are all implemented. That was Witkoff speaking to the Hamas leadership that they met with there in Egypt.
They must have been scared out of their minds. Like, I understand that these people do all of this for a living. And so
are you talking about Witkoff and Kushner?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, they had met with them once before. This is the second time.
I mean, you're meeting with terrorists, a terror group,
yeah,
obviously. And then also, I just kept praying that nothing happened to the president and everyone
while he was
traveling while he was there. I mean, yes, we have the best of everything, best security. We know everything that's happening and the best intelligence. But still, it just made me nervous, and nervous for all of, like, they have high-profile jobs. I think about Marco Rubio's wife, Secretary Hegseth's wife, Witkoff's family. Just, they're high-profile, and that can be really dangerous, especially when we're dealing with these groups of people. But thank God nothing happened.
Yeah, I just think it's a remarkable story to hear that, because I only bring it up because if you think of all the history of how diplomatic relations have traditionally been done, where it's a lot of back channel dealing, a lot of intermediaries.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of direct communication. Mm-hmm. It's all of this, like, very old fashioned diplomacy of, like, this is how things are done. This is the process we need to go through. And not being, I don't know if it's risk averse or if it's like such a dependence on what is the typical established way of doing things. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, I mean, think about it. Ultimately, who closed this deal was three real estate developers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of crazy.
The trajectory is really interesting. Like, a New York real estate mogul just, like, brokered world peace. And I saw a bunch of, like, memes going around just, like, at this time last year, Donald Trump was serving fries at McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
He was.
And now he's
traveling
around the world, like, shutting down wars. That's quite an upward trajectory he's taken. Even for people who were hopeful that he was going to bring peace around the world to different areas. I mean, if he can lock down the Ukraine-Russia thing, which I just think is intractable and not going to be
solved. Well, you know, Zelensky's
right
coming.
Now. Yeah,
next
he's coming
week?
This week. This week.
Yeah. This I week. Think. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, it's wild. It's wild that it happened. And it's the fact that it is so just beyond what I thought would happen. And yet there are so many Americans that refuse to see it for what it is and be happy about it. If for nothing else, for the hostage families, but they dwell in their hatred perpetually. And that
of the president,
of the president. And that does not allow them to even admit reality when they're staring at it. And so it's just, I was so taken aback when I would, like, go on Facebook and people that I know not even mention it.
Yeah.
The last
no,
two
we're
years,
gonna get
they,
into
it's all
that.
They've talked about. Anyways, move on. But yes, the whole thing is crazy. And I look forward to the day that Marco Rubio is talking about, where we can kind of just go, what? He did that. Yeah, I do too.
Absolutely reading the book.
I want to know who's going to write it. And Donald Trump's going to write it. And We'll have a book club.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after that, actually, did you, I just need to mention this because of course, Trump, like I remember we were messaging and Trump was doing great. I was like, he's actually, his speech is like, he's on point. He's doing pretty good.
Well,
he's not veering off. And then I follow up with like, forget about that. Never mind.
Yeah.
One of them being, did you hear him when he called or asked to pardon Bibi?
Bibi, yes, I saw that.
Yeah, let's listen to that one.
With you, I guess maybe something could happen to change my mind. Somebody that's really stupid gets into office and wants to do really bad things, but that's about it. We don't think we're going to have that happen. I hope we're not going to have that happen. And this man is a good man right here. These two men are good men right here. Hey, I have an idea, Mr. President. Why don't you give him a pardon? Give him a pardon.
He's got people standing up and applauding. I mean, what? So those of you who don't know, Bibi is currently being investigated, I think, for maybe potentially... It's being framed as like some type of bribery or favors, but I think like the bribery or favors was like gifts of wine or something. Like it wasn't like, you know, a bag of cash or anything like that. I don't know the full details, but in the midst of him being, you know, a wartime leader, prime minister, he's also being investigated. And I think he was due to go to trial this week. So, like, all of this is going on and Trump just decides to go, hey, can you pardon this guy? I'm not familiar with the politics and the situation in Israel. A lot of it is being framed as an attack on Bibi, kind of similar to what we saw on the president here in the United States. I'm not 100% sure on the legitimacy of that, but that's, you know, the one of the talking points that is going around.
Can I ask a weird question? And I'm going to feel foolish if I should know this. I probably should know why, but I don't. Uh-huh. And it just dawned on me. Why doesn't Bibi wear a yarmulke all the time?
I don't know.
I'm curious about it. No, I don't believe so. Unless it's the color of his hair.
It's possible.
I mean, it's possible, but I swear when he was just giving that speech, I didn't see one on him.
I have never paid. Well, now I gotta go look and see.
Two months ago.
See, look.
You fully backed my decision to send the IDF.
I don't see one.
Into the last Hamas stronghold.
No, he does not have one.
He just has names that look like. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if anybody has an answer,
I know. Let us
answer Rachel's question because I have no idea. I mean, I'm not Jewish. I can't answer. I don't know. Also,
I do know some Jews that wear all the time. And then other ones like Bibi, all the time.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it's a preference thing or I don't know.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Well, after the president addressed the Knesset, he then did a hop over to Egypt. It's not like it was
just hopped on the Air Force One and
big
went over.
Flight.
By the way, follow people in his administration. I follow them, some of them exclusively for the pictures of like the food on Air Force One. Every time they're on Air Force One, they'll take it. And do you know they have to pay for their own food, by the way?
Yes.
On Air Force One.
Anyhow. Margo
Margot Martin, I think is her last name. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's a great follow if you want to get like some inside images of what's going on.
Yeah.
But he went over to Egypt and then he addressed.
He had an escort too. Didn't the Egyptian.
Yeah. Yeah. Planes. He even commented on that where like they were very flying cool. in and all of a sudden these Egyptian jets showed up and he's like, well, wait a minute. Is this all.
What's happening?
I'm supposed to be here. Please calm down.
Yes.
But let me share some remarks that he made.
This is the day that people across the region and around the world have been working, striving, hoping, and praying for. They have done things over the last month that I think were really unthinkable. Nobody thought this could happen. With the historic agreement we've just signed, those prayers of millions have finally been answered. As you know, the hostages have been returned, and further work goes on having to do with the, sadly to say, bodies. Together, we've achieved what everybody said was impossible. At long last, we have peace in the Middle East, and it's a very simple expression, Jin, peace in the Middle East, and we've heard it for many years, but nobody thought it could ever get there, and now we're there.
Now, he's gotten a little bit of criticism about just declaring peace in the Middle East because, I mean, as long as I've been a kid, remember, it was like the beauty pageant answer. I want world peace or peace in the Middle East or something like that. And now he's declaring that with the signing of this deal, finally, we have reached peace in the Middle East. And he's getting some criticism for just like flat out declaring that.
It's kind of like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy a little bit. Like you can't just say it. I mean, he's getting us as close as any living world leader has gotten us. But they definitely didn't love that he was just saying, oh, it's over. Now everything's over. Yeah. Meanwhile, last night, like Hamas was executing Palestinians.
Yes. Yeah. That's citizens, one of the things I was going to touch on. Like this particular. So now he's in Egypt. He's signing the peace deal.
Guys have to watch it if you can watch it. He is so funny.
I have one because what was funny about this is that not only, first of all, I wish I had one of the clips because one clip, he is sitting at the table with these Middle Eastern leaders. So it's Egypt, Turkey, and Qatar, right? And behind him, you see Macron and you see Starmer, but I see Carney over his shoulder. And he even makes mention of something like, that these people are behind me and it's kind of funny that they're behind us. And like, he's poking is what he's doing. And he's poking because these are the same people that undermined him like 2 weeks before the peace deal. And they put their money, they betted against the president is what happened and decided to declare Palestine, which did what exactly? Yeah. I have no idea.
It didn't, even the people in Palestine, they were interviewed and they're like, it means nothing. Like, saying it just doesn't make it happen. And you did see,
You want to talk about declaring bankruptcy? That was declaring bankruptcy.
Yeah, seriously. That was not a good move. I don't know if you have this clip, but did you see when he was like basically calling out each leader and kind of, you know, acknowledging their involvement? And then he called on Keir Starmer and Starmer like walked up thinking he was
I don't have it.
Oh, it's so good. Thinking he was maybe going to get to speak because like Pakistanis... Prime Minister spoke, which was amazing, actually.
I have that. Actually, you know what? Let me go ahead and share that real quick.
For his outstanding, extraordinary contributions to, first, stop war between India and Pakistan, and then achieve ceasefire, along with his very wonderful... And today, again, I would like to nominate this great president for Nobel Peace Prize. Because I genuinely feel he is the most genuine and most wonderful candidate for Peace Prize because he has brought not only peace in South Asia, saved millions of people, their lives. And today, here in Sharm el-Sheikh, achieving peace in Gaza is saving millions of lives in the Middle East. Mr. President, I would like to salute you for your exemplary leadership, visionary leadership, and I think that you are the man this world needed most at this point in time.
I loved that. I was watching it back here with my husband and
it's like, I'm not getting feelings.
No, it was, I'm like, who is this guy? Let's go to Pakistan. That's the next vacation. He just seemed so, he was again, so genuine. And I think it kind of caught Trump even off guard. Like, yeah, he loves someone who loves him. That. But he was like, whoa, even for Trump, he was like, that's a little much. Thank you so much.
It's
you
know? Actually funny that the president mentioned that the Pakistani president mentioned the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. Because at one point, which I don't have, even the president
when he was like Sweden,
mentioned Sweden.
Where's
and
Sweden?
He's like,
oh, they're back there. Sweden.
Sweden. Because Sweden is where the Nobel Peace Prize comes from. And it was just...
No, but I really he disses people so perfectly. And when Keir Starmer walked up, he thought he was going to get his chance at the microphone. And Trump just slid back in place in front of the podium. And
He kind of hopped up like excited. Like he's like, oh, I got called up to the front of the class. And then
and
he's
so
like, no,
Keir Starmer
kind of
just like turned around and walked back. And you just are like, that's what you get. Like,
oh, my gosh.
This is what
well, and he didn't like this. This one to me, I was dying laughing. Where he kind of joked about who he likes
and who
he
doesn't like.
I've known so many of you for so long. You're friends of mine. You're great people. I have a couple I don't like in particular, but I won't tell you who. I have actually a few of them I don't like at all. But you'll never find out who they are.
But
well, maybe you will come to think of it. But I have most of you who I like a lot and I respect a lot. Maybe that's more important.
It's only him. And we are watching this and just laughing. And you know what else was really funny? Was we were watching it on Fox. And so he kind of wrapped up his remarks. And they're like, all right, what you just watched was President Trump. Oh, wait, he's back. Wait. Okay, hold on. So they cut back and he'd give a few more remarks. And they'd be like, yes, it's a historic. Oh, wait, nope, there's more. He's coming back. They cut away like three different times because he just kept, he loves it. He loves being in front of the microphone. He loves talking. He loves to see people's responses when he's talking. He complimented Maloney for being beautiful. He was just all over the place.
He got into another like handshake wrestling match with Macron.
Yeah.
Which was freaking hilarious. Also, somebody did this compilation where, because the president was standing up on the stage doing photo ops with all the leaders that were there. And he just stood there and everybody kept walking up and shaking his hand.
He was the
doing
most
their
popular
photo op.
Kid at school.
Everybody
wants to be around him.
It was just really surreal and it was wild. And I cannot wait to hear the details. And I know, like, you know, here in the United States, there's a contingent that's like, either doesn't care or it's not a big deal because that's over there and we're concerned about things that are going on here. And while I think, obviously, yes, we are concerned with things that are going on here. If you think that conflict in the Middle East is good for the United States or is not like wouldn't negatively affect us, especially in regards to a global economy, I think that's not realistic. And quite naive. And I think what's really interesting about this particular situation, it's like, as I mentioned before, we ended up with three businessmen, basically, who negotiated Middle East peace because versus the previous administrations, and this includes Bush and this includes both Democrat and Republican administrations, like the focus was always about, well, we can't give concessions if they're not going to, you know, reach democratic norms, or we have to not be too favorable to either side, or you know what I mean? It was like all of this like dancing around and this like passive aggressiveness and then like insisting that you have to agree. Like it was more ideology focused versus Trump's going in there doing business deals. And he's like, look, if you want to do business with the United States, if you want to prosper as a country, if you want to be able to engage in commerce or anything like that, you need to let these people go.
Yeah.
You need to make, and I just think it's just a very different strategy than anything that we have seen as long as I've been alive, you know, like I can't think, and probably even before that. And I'm just wondering what will happen in time because we are in the very beginning stages. And so I'm wondering, will this hold? What happens when we have a different president? What happens if a Democrat comes in? You know, and falls back on norms And that's if it's an establishment Democrat. Like, it's even worse if it's like a progressive Democrat. Like, what the?
Yeah.
What's going to happen then?
I don't know.
You know?
I mean, we're already almost at a year. And he was asked that yesterday. Somebody said, like, what's going to happen? And he basically, I mean, his face said it all. His face was like, I don't know. Hopefully some wackadoo doesn't get elected, because things can be unraveled. So
very easily.
Right now,
I mean, think about
right now, this
when,
is hope, the hopeful.
Well, think about when Biden came into office, who immediately started just dismantling everything, the Abraham Accords, all of the practice, try to do the Iran deal over again. Like, he completely took apart anything that Trump had done, and vice versa. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say that it's not like Republicans don't step in and undo things.
Yeah.
But one of them generated a result. The other one didn't. So
yeah,
one couldn't get it across the line, so to speak. Yep. But I do want to share, because most importantly, what happened yesterday was the release of the hostages. So there were 20 remaining hostages. And there's also still 28 unaccounted for who have who died in captivity. And I think they've only gotten back 4 of those deceased hostages. Now, there's a lot of discussion about specifically the deceased hostages on whether or not it's because Hamas is trying to hold on to them for negotiation purposes, or if it's what Hamas is saying is that they can't access some of them, or they can't find them because they're under rubble or something along those lines. And I saw Trey Yanks, who has been covering, he's the war correspondent over at Fox News, and he actually mentioned this issue specifically. And he reported that the peace agreement has within it, there's a call for an international coalition that will go into Gaza and help locate the remaining bodies. So I think they had already anticipated that
this might happen.
It wasn't exactly that this might happen, and they weren't exactly just saving them, so to speak, or taking care of them, and that they would have to be retrieved and identified. There's, you know, there's a little bit of debate going on whether or not Hamas is already reneging on the peace deal by not giving over the bodies, or whether or not it's legitimately that they can't find them. But in time, in future stages, there's supposed to be this international coalition that will go in to help retrieve these other bodies. But I want to share some video of reunions.
Yeah. So I woke up to that when I first checked my phone.
That was like,
peace deal's been made. And here is an onslaught of things that are going to make you cry. So that's how I started my day, with a headache after all the tears.
Same. This is a mother hugging her son. This one tore me up. So he was held when his youngest was 6 months old. So she doesn't recognize him. And I think his oldest was maybe like a year or 2 years old, something like that. So they're playing together as a family. Stop crying, Rachel.
I can't.
And that's just like a handful. The other one, like, the iconic image, and I'm going to play it here, where many people remember, of the girl on the motorcycle being taken away, yelling for her boyfriend. Her name was Noah. I do remember her name. And that was one of the images on October 7th that many of us saw. She was released. And I think she's been free for about a year, and this is them reuniting. Look how thin he is compared to who he was in that first video. So I can't, like, them
going through that, because I think the reports are that they held hid in a ditch for a while, and he actually had an opportunity to escape, but he didn't want to leave her behind, and he returned to retrieve her. They hid in a ditch. He went to go help some people, and that's in the in that process is when they were taken away. And then another story I think a lot of people will be familiar with is, I think maybe I would say less than 6 months ago, there was images of a man that was emaciated in the tunnels and was digging his own grave. So this is a picture of him on the bottom part. Here we go. And that is him with his parents being reunited on Monday, yesterday. And I mean, you can tell that they fed him a little bit more before they decided to do the exchange. But if you see pictures of him from when he was taken, like, he was a big dude. Mm-hmm. And I just so all of these hostages that were exchanged, they been reunited with their families. They are being treated at hospitals, especially because of their diet is a big concern. There are reports of them. I think one of them had spent the entire 2 years in the tunnels in isolation, the majority of it chained up. And I'm just like really disturbed that with all of this information and everything that we know that happened, the reaction of like, I don't know, just like, I don't want to say it's indifference. It's just.
That's exactly what it is.
It is. It's just like.
When you talk about something, when you talk about something ad nauseum for 2 years straight, I'm thinking, I'm talking right now specifically about the progressive left that made mm-hmm. this conflict their entire personality for two straight years. How a ceasefire has to happen, how there will be no freedom until a ceasefire happens. And now a ceasefire is, a peace deal has been signed. There is forward movement. If you actually cared about what you were parroting and what you were saying, you would recognize this as a huge development. This should be your talking point because this is what you said you wanted. So now you got it. And to say nothing speaks so much louder than any statement that they could make. And I think people need to remember the voices that called for a ceasefire, 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 ceasefire. They called for it and now they got mm-hmm. it and they say nothing. Please remember those voices the next time they tell you something is important to them because.
Well, I just think about when October 7th happened, there was mm-hmm. there were crowds of people celebrating in the street.
Yes.
And now that there's yes. a ceasefire and now yes. that there has been an exchange, because not just a ceasefire, mind you, there's also been an exchange of hostages mm-hmm. for Palestinians, yeah, for terrorist Palestinians, okay, yeah. mm-hmm. and detainees.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. 2,000 of them. And for some – and right now, even if you – like even if you're upset still about – the genocide, and I'm air mm-hmm. quoting there, or of the destruction that happened in Gaza mm-hmm. and all of these things, you would still expect people to be happy that no. it has stopped and the goal is to stop it and that it's not going to continue and that people have returned home and that there is forward movement.
Because it wasn't about that. It actually wasn't about a ceasefire for them. Those people that are calling for it, every one of those celebrities that talked about it all the time, that wasn't actually what they were doing. They were just moving on to the next narrative that they could glom onto that was catching traction, that could be anti-Trump, that could be anti-authoritarian, that could be anti yada, 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 Republicans, conservatives, whatever, anti-Israel, whatever they see as an opportunity, they grabbed it.
Well, I mean, we have to acknowledge that it's because the end goal was from the river to the sea.
Of course.
The end goal was for the annihilation of it. And I'm talking about like not just Hamas's goal and mm-hmm. not just the – like I'm talking about the pro-Palestine activism that we've seen here in the United States. The college movement.
They called for – they didn't even like pretend that that wasn't what they want. They said from the river to the sea, Israel should not have a state, period. We want them out, mm-hmm. all of them, and by any means necessary. These are all things that we saw in photographs and we saw them chanting and saw them saying. It was not that's why the whole movement was disingenuous. They, half of them weren't saying what they actually wanted, and the other half didn't actually know that that's what they were marching for. They just were like, oh, it's the new thing that everybody, you know, climate change, and then it's like trans rights, and now it's Palestine. And they didn't know that they actually were gluing themselves to a movement that really wants to see Jews done away with.
And it's not just that, because mind you, nobody is also talking about the fighting that is currently happening within Gaza. So Israel has retreated from the interior region of Gaza, right? Yeah. The one that's like closest in towards the coast. Mm-hmm. And with their retreat, there is currently fighting happening between what remains of Hamas and a Syrian clan, where they're moving in as policing. And I have an I-24 news report that kind of gives a breakdown of what is happening there.
The Muslim Brotherhood umbrella over Gaza is perhaps as wide as it has never been. But if we're looking at what is happening right now, and Fuad began speaking about this, if we could show a video of what is happening right now in the streets of the Sabra neighborhood in Gaza City. These are armed clashes. These are Hamas gunmen that are firing indiscriminately towards the homes of the Durmush clan. This is one of the largest clans in Gaza City. For over 2 days now, they've been carrying out a brutal crackdown. This is in Gaza City right now.
Right, okay.
And so this does not look like an organization that, one, plans to disarm, or two, plans to cede control anytime soon. And what I talked about earlier in the broadcast, that in this extended phase one, that we don't know when its end date is going to be, we are going to see more and more images like this happening right now in the streets of Gaza.
So that's happening right now in Gaza, right? You don't hear anybody talking about it. Nobody's reporting on it. Nobody's upset about it. Nobody's calling for Hamas to stand down and stop fighting within Gaza. That is happening in Gaza City.
Right.
Now, what I found interesting was that Trump was asked about this specifically. I don't know if this was on the way, which direction it was, but it was during one of the press gaggles on Air Force One. And he's kind of hard to understand, but I'm going to play it for everyone. He says, what Trump says is that they want to stop the problems. They've been open about it. And we gave them approval for a period of time. So let's listen to him.
Of Hamas rearming, instituting themselves as a Palestinian police force, shooting rivals. What is your message
to
Hamas?
We are standing because they do want to stop the problems, and they've been open about it, and we gave them approval for a period of time. You have to understand, they've lost probably 60,000 people. That's a lot of retribution. They've lost 60,000 people, and the ones that are living right now were, in many cases, very young when this all started. And we are having them watch that there's not going to be big crime or some of the problems that you have when you have areas like this that have been literally demolished. You know, you have 2 million people, and probably it'll be less than that, but you have close to 2 million people going back to buildings that have been demolished. And a lot of bad things can happen. So we want it to be safe. I think it's going to be fine.
So, I don't know, doesn't it sound like
they gave him the green light to just
take
care of what they saw as a problem going on there?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like. And he's saying it, it's almost one of those things where he's saying it so clearly and not like covering it up. So you're like, wait, am I wrong? Or are you just saying, yes, we told them they could do this? I'm going to need some clarity here.
I was find it interesting because what I'm hearing is that there is remnants of Hamas. Yeah. There are some people that want to police the area, which is who Hamas is fighting. It's the force that is wanting to police the area to keep peace.
Yeah.
So Hamas sees them as a threat, and now they're battling it out.
And Trump knows
fingers
it.
And crossed. Fingers crossed, Hamas doesn't win.
And that's what he said at the end. He's like, I think it's going to be okay. Me too. I mean, okay.
Now, the Hamas Interior Ministry issued a warning and said any army activity outside the framework of resistance would be met with decisive action. And so there's also been reports, like that was fighting between those two sects, but there's also been reports of Hamas executing people in the street because they are working outside the framework of resistance, which would mean resistance to Israel.
Israel. Yeah.
So it's not exactly hunky-dory and peaceful in Gaza or Gaza City right now, even after Israel has left and they're no longer you know, like, I mean, they're still there, but they're not interfering and they're out of that particular region.
Yeah.
So
it's and almost like Hamas just wants violence and bloodshed. It's almost like that's the case.
Yet, like, nobody is talking about that. So, and not what's funny, too, is that you actually have some that are trying to claim credit for what happened. So leading Democrats have been posting about the hostage releases on social media. Of course, they're doing their absolute best to avoid
giving Trump
too much credit.
It's like he's Voldemort. Right? They just refuse to say his name.
Well, I mean, Kamala Harris, let me see. I have one. I read hers and she talks about she's thankful and deeply encouraged. She, I mean, it's like a three paragraph X post. Okay. Yeah. She does not mention his name once.
Oh, I thought she did.
Once. No.
She did. Oh, she didn't. You know, you got to give credit where credit's
due. I think she
due.
Says the president. Yeah, she said the president and his team, but she does not mention his name like Voldemort. One time. The only one that gave a valid response.
The Clintons did. They did.
Was Bill Clinton.
They're still a little bit old school to where like you just did the right thing.
I should specify it was Bill Clinton. It was.
Oh, I thought
Clintons.
Hillary did too.
I
think she made a statement on television.
Maybe. She did. She was interviewed and she did. You're absolutely right. So I will give her some credit too. I also thought it was funny. Obama also was celebrating, but I don't even think he mentioned the president. Like at least Kamala Harris said the president. Like he didn't say anything.
He's a bitter fella.
And then Biden, he said.
Basically, we started this. Thanks for cleaning up the mess at the end. Yeah.
He says, the road to this deal was not easy. My administration worked relentlessly to bring hostages home, get relief to Palestinian civilians, and end the war. I commend President Trump and his team for the work to get a renewed ceasefire deal over the finish line. Now, first of all, like, is it fair to categorize this as just a ceasefire deal?
Well, no. Like,
no, right?
Ceasefire is temporary. They're hoping that this is...
I mean, obviously there's phases and the phase one is this, but the fact is that there has been a signed deal that has benchmarks to move through phases to ultimately reach a point of peace and of like
something lasting, something more than a temporary like Band-Aid. Yeah.
Because the previous administration was just doing like, let's do this ceasefire so we can get humanitarian aid in, get some hostages in, and then you can go fight again.
But and they're I'm calling like, it a ceasefire and they're doing all of these things to downplay it. It's like what I said earlier. This is what they just cannot admit to themselves that this is good and that something good happened under Trump's watch. And so they're going to do everything they can to downplay it. So now it's just a ceasefire. And I've even heard like people who have feel shamed into posting something, they kind of have an air of like, well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Which I think
that kind
is
of thing.
Not unfair because obviously like I do, you know, Trump is a salesman. He is a businessman. You know what I mean? Yeah. So declaring peace in the Middle East is what he's going to do because he is like the ultimate optimist or whatever. But we have to admit that this is a fragile situation.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So,
but that's not the essence of these posts I'm seeing. It's like, I mean, I hope it's good. Glad the hostages are back, but this is Trump. So anything could happen. So,
and what I've also seen is like disappointment that Trump got it done and Biden didn't.
And that he's not getting the glory.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's
but see, Biden wasn't going to get it done. There's a reason why it didn't happen under Biden. Just like there's
no
a reason
way.
Why
and I guarantee
the border
you.
Was open. Like, we can't close the border. Well, yeah, you can. And he did. So it's exactly the same thing.
I guarantee you that when the book gets written, that it's going to be like, we took this all out because it was stupid and this.
Yeah.
You know who has been really disgusting to me is your former governor. Wait, was he ever your governor? McAuliffe? Were you there when Gavin Newsom? No.
Oh, you're talking about in California. Yeah, Newsom.
Yeah.
He's the worst of all time.
Yeah, he's so like Trump
like literally,
is leaving.
He's so
he has
bad.
Not even mentioned the hostages, much less the peace deal once. Nope. And as Trump was leaving, as Trump was leaving to sign the deal, he posts this about how Trump can't handle an umbrella, doesn't mention anything about the peace deal whatsoever. And then today, the Governor Newsom's press office shared a picture of Trump and Netanyahu that says peace through strength, shaking hands, and reposted it with a picture of Dumb and Dumber. And I'm just like, of all of the things that you can respond to or like you can make fun of, why do you have to include this particular topic? And then on top of that, not mention the reunion of the hostages with their families, like at all. Or even like, even if you don't want to talk about Israel, how about you just like mention the fact that Palestinians aren't getting bombed anymore?
Yeah. It's because, like I said, they don't care. They don't care. It was virtue signaling. And let me say this. I'm going to say my piece about this because you guys all know, if you've been around long enough, you know how much I hate the memification of politics. You know how I don't love all of the like snarky posting. I know you do. I know you do. Okay. Okay. And I will say, to be fair, some of the stuff the White House puts out is genuinely funny.
It was funny.
I can't deny it. Even though I hate it, but I hate it and I love it at the same time. But this is what you get, though. See, this is the only difference between and yesterday or this morning's post by Gavin Newsom's press office is in very bad taste.
Yeah.
But I could also argue that a lot of the things that are put out online are just in bad taste. Like, just don't do it. We talk about it all the time. The difference is it's easier to kind of swallow the stuff that's in bad taste if it's funny. And Trump and his administration are objectively better, like we talked about, I think, last week, at like the memes and the videos. Yes. They're just funny. And Gavin Newsom and Democrats writ large are just not good at that game. And so it makes it less palatable. Now, I don't care who would have put out that post that Gavin Newsom's office put out. It's gross no matter what. I don't like it at all.
Well, I think it's in particular bad taste because it's one thing when you're poking jabs at each other.
Yeah.
And you're being political domestically, for example. Yes.
But this is a foreign leader and a foreign war.
And a war.
And hostages.
And a war.
Who have been in tunnels for 2 years. Yes. This one was like objectively bad. Very, very, very bad.
I mean, I think this is very different than putting a sombrero on.
Me too. But what I said in a really long signal, like recording for you this morning that got deleted immediately after I voiced it. This is what happens though. So like when you give the permission structure for things that are in poor taste, there's always going to be one or two, jerks that take it too far. They take it to the next level. And we have done this for all of our politics. This is just what politics is now. And then you just have people that don't know when to rein it in, a la Gavin Newsom. And I mean, but again, it's because they don't care. I genuinely don't think he cares about this conflict at all. He saw it as a way he could make fun of Donald Trump. That's all it is to him.
I just thought it was really, well, and another thing that, because you've mentioned now a few times of, you know, how there's been a silence. Mm-hmm. You know, from all of these ceasefire pro-Palestine. Do you know who Colin Wright is?
Yes.
Okay. So he's on X and he's been very much in discussing the trans ideology issue and gender issues. And he goes and he says, I checked in on Blue Sky to see how people there are reacting to the release of the Israeli hostages. And it's the eeriest thing. It's not trending. There's no mention of it on the Explorer tab. I started scrolling the feed and went through hundreds of posts without seeing a single one that mentioned it. Instead, it's all posts about Mondani, John Oliver's new episode criticizing Barry Weiss and Jamie Reed, the No Kings protests apparently happening this weekend, Taylor Swift, Epstein Files, yada, yada, and how Antifa doesn't exist. It's honestly blowing my mind how ideologically airtight that bubble is. If anyone primarily gets their news by scrolling Blue Sky, there's a good chance they don't even know that Trump negotiated a deal for the hostages and that they were released today. And it's even more mind-blowing that this echo chamber is entirely self-imposed because they were not banned from X like we were.
No, they just wanted to get away from anybody that thinks differently than
anyone
them.
Who challenged their ideas. And so they went over to Blue Sky. So, and if you guys aren't familiar with what Blue Sky is, it's basically
progressive far leftist Twitter because they got their feelings hurt on X after Elon bought it. And so they went over to Blue Sky. And it is a cesspool over there.
I have not ever
My
logged
personal
on
opinion.
Do you have a... Okay, can we break into this real quick with some breaking news that Trump is welcoming Argentina's Milei to the White House? I mean, the guy is like, he doesn't stop.
He just woke up.
He has another head of state at the White House, and then he has this ceremony at 4 in like 2 hours. What is happening? These poor press pool, like they are so exhausted. I guarantee all of these reporters.
Well, and it's not like... Everything we talked about mostly about Israel and everything like that, but there are also things happening here domestically.
Yes.
Like the government is still shut down. What are we in, like day 17 or 18
Today's
of the government
14.
Shutdown?
Today's day
okay.
14.
So we're not that far in. I was like, I knew we were like at least 2 weeks in. Okay. Yeah. And there's like a ton of discussion. And also, by the way, we have protests that are coming up, the No Kings mm-hmm. Day, the National Guard deployments in, which I want to talk about real quick because there's a lot of battle about Portland and Chicago specifically, mm-hmm. Illinois and Oregon. And there's been, in Chicago, a federal judge ruled that the National Guard troops can remain, but blocked street patrols or the protecting of federal property. I don't know how that works. Oh, okay. Meanwhile, in Portland, a U.S. district judge fully blocked the National Guard from deploying on Saturday. So you have one saying like they can deploy, but they can't do anything. And then the other one's being like, you can't deploy at all. Also in Chicago today, there was a ruling. I think they have until midnight today over at the Broadview facility, mm-hmm. which is where all of these protests have been happening, mm-hmm. to take down some fencing that they had erected mm-hmm. to protect the facility. Because the city argues that the fencing blocked emergency vehicles from getting through. Okay. So now they have to take down that fencing and they can, I think they're going to do some other alternative like barricades. And also in all of that, this weekend, while, you know, everyone's kind of running or doing their business and we're concerned about Israel, you had state patrol. So this mm-hmm. was in Illinois. So you had Illinois State Patrol who had to intervene with the protesters outside that Broadview facility to push them back. So all of this time about how like law enforcement wasn't responding, it was not Chicago PD, ended up being the state police that had to respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I bring this all up.
Okay. I see where you're going.
Because Memphis also has National Guard that have been deployed and nobody is talking about them. Mm-mm. And I would argue because the deployment of National Guard to Chicago and Portland is primarily to protect the federal buildings and the federal officers. Mm-hmm. However, in Memphis, even though there are ICE operations, it's more about dealing with crime, which mm-hmm. I would argue is not within their jurisdiction.
Yeah. But why aren't they talking about it then? You would think that that would be a very handy talking point.
You would think, especially since Memphis is a predominantly, it's a Democrat city, predominantly Black city.
So why what do you think is the reason that they're not talking
about
it?
Well, I mean, first of all, one of the issues with it, or not the issues, one of the issues for the Democrats or one of the challenges is that the governor here in Tennessee is a Republican. Yeah. So there has been a request for the National Guard. And I believe there's also reports that it's going to happen in New Orleans next. And mm-hmm. the New Orleans governor is also a Republican. So that's going to be a request. So because of the request, you can kind of say it's being done on the up and up. But fellow governors could be pointing out that fellow Republican governors are undermining and being, I don't know,
law enforcement.
Racist, mm-hmm. exactly, against the Black, blue cities in their states. But nobody is talking about it. Like, literally nobody is talking about it. In fact,
you think it's just because everybody's so consumed and busy with other domestic issues?
Well, I also think it's because I'm going to play this guy who lives in Memphis for
you. All I want to say is, Trump, you're doing your big thing, man. We got the kids back outside on, their bikes. The lawnmower's back going, the dog's back barking. Memphis is looking real good out here, man. Hey, man, you did your big one, man. Appreciate you for helping cleaning up Memphis. Hey, MPD, well, I don't even know what to say about y'all. I done walked to the store. Y'all got me a bag of ice. I ain't walked to the store in about 20 years. You ain't got to worry about no pop, pop, pop. You ain't got to worry about no.
So maybe they're just like, don't say anything because it's kind of working.
Because it's kind of working.
We needed this. We needed this. I love this for us, even if it's maybe a little bit against the law, maybe.
Well, and that's my thing. It's like, you know what I mean? I do not think you should be deploying National Guard, federal.
To take care of
local
state
crime.
Law like, enforcement.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Absolutely. However, I'm wondering, because this to me is looking like an entire, I don't want to say setup, but like a staging, let's say. This is a staging. You know, of course, yes, they care. The president cares about, he absolutely cares about crime. Mm-hmm. He absolutely cares about illegal immigration. He does not appreciate in any way, shape, or form, like death of citizens. He doesn't like it in Israel. He doesn't like it in the Ukraine. Yeah. And he especially doesn't like it here in the United States. Okay. Yeah. And so this is how he believes is the quickest and most effective way to have a solution. Now, the Democrats, of course, are trying to frame this as his, it's rooted in authoritarianism. He's going to put the military throughout the entire United right. States, and we're going to be under martial law or whatever, which yeah. is not really my concern at all because,
no.
honestly,
I mean, we'd be under martial law. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, like it's not Get my real. Concern.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you have to admit that we are going to run into an issue because what happens, like, the National Guard can't be there forever. Mm-hmm. So, what are you going to do if, like, once they come back or they, you know, retreat or whatever, however you want to frame it, and then crime comes back. So there right. has to be some kind of crime bill or something is being worked in the pipeline.
Yes.
There has to be a solution. And so I think, and just like you're having the issue right now with the government shutdown and the Democrats trying to frame this as an issue of healthcare, which they're staging it, I believe, in preparation for the midterms to make healthcare a midterm issue. Yeah. And if the Republicans are smart, they get the government opened back up and they do deal with the healthcare situation. Mm-hmm. You can't deal with it though right now if the government's shut down, which in my opinion, I feel like the Democrats want it to be shut down longer so it can't be dealt with. So then it does become an issue
yeah. oh, definitely.
During the midterms. That's how I see it. But the same thing you can apply to crime. And so my question is once the National Guard is no longer in these cities, and if crime does return to be an issue, then the Republicans come and present a bill, a crime bill, what have you, whether it be funding or whatever shape it takes, it will put the Democrats in a position of either voting for it or against it, because the argument's going to be, look, I fixed the crime issue. Now we need to maintain it.
Yeah.
And if we don't maintain it, it's going to come back. So are you going to vote against this because you don't care and you want crime to return to where it was after I fixed it?
Right. Right.
So I feel like this is kind of the...
It's forcing an issue. It's going to force people to get real about what they actually think about the crime in these cities. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of immigration and the Department of Homeland Security.
Yes. I think I know what you're going to play.
I want to play this. So SNL did a skit this weekend, and I want to play the original skit first. So Tina Fey came back. I think Amy Poehler was hosting. And so Amy okay. Poehler is Pam Bondi, and Tina Fey is Christy Noem. So I'm going to play the skit for you. It's not the full skit, obviously. I'm just going to play a little snippet for you guys.
Okay. Hold my gun. That's right, it's me, Christy Noem. I spell my name with an I because that's how I thought it was spelled. And I'm the rarest type of person in Washington, D.C., a brunette that Donald Trump listens to.
I mean, it's pretty spot on, actually.
I mean, her frozen face, I think, is the funniest part of it. Because well, that's exactly extensions.
What. Yeah. And I mean, Amy Poehler wasn't a bad Pam Bondi either with like the face.
Well,
the movie.
And so the entire skit was supposed to be when Pam Bondi was before doing her hearing, and every response to her, the questions was like a slapback or a comeback or whatever to whoever was asking her the question. So it was very confrontational. Yeah. And I think there was even reports of her having like comebacks written on a piece of paper in preparation for it. So, which is kind of ridiculous. And so
yeah, really.
In this skit, you know, they also bring in the other female, Christy Noem, to talk about the ICE raids and, you know, she's toting a gun and everything like that. Yeah. And we've talked about Christy. Yeah. How she's, you know, especially in the beginning, was coming off very performative.
Well, she was like the Ice Barbie. Like she
It was just
the outfits
super
and
awkward.
The hair and the Rolex and the
extensions and the lashes and just everything, right?
There was a lot there.
Now, I just want to point out that this administration, like you've talked, has been really good with memeing and comebacks and even like, you know, mentioning comebacks. Like Charlie Kirk was even mocked on South Park.
Yep.
And he took it with like in stride, made it his profile picture. Like we all kind of like... Yeah. And I think it's funny because a lot of times online, the Democrats will be like, they're laughing at you, not with you. And we're like, well, also we're laughing at them because it doesn't really bother us.
Yeah.
So DHS has decided to use the Kristi Noem Tina Fey for an ad.
Oh, my gosh.
Our government agents are working without pay. Luckily, my boys at ICE don't mind. They're in it for the love of the game. And how did I find them? By running ads like this.
Lord have mercy.
If I put this on a problem, I can help us solve it. But I'm a headache, but for being myself, my target. Extra come retarded, should have been about it. Think I like them, Calvin, because I piss on them regardless. Three perks I just started, four perks feeling gorgeous. I do not offer the gangsters.
They're just good at it. They're so much funnier. They're so much funnier. And I just can almost see like Tina Fey being like, what? Yeah. They should have known that though. They should have known that they were going
to
do something.
Everything they do,
the White House and this administration takes and makes it funnier. Like the fat J.D. Vance faces and they're just the sombreros. Like they're just better at it.
I mean, for those of you who are listening right now, it cuts from Tina Fey talking about we do these ads, and it jump cuts. First of all, the first thing that you see is Kristi Noem in the back of a car with all her boys or whatever. But it's all a bunch of jump cuts of ICE doing operations and arrests. It looks freaking cool. Like if I wasn't a 46-year-old woman, I might go sign up to be an ICE officer after that ad.
Yeah. It's like how you feel when you see an ad when they used to make really good military ads that would air on television, like, you know, for the Marines or Coast Guard or whatever. And you'd watch them. And at the end, you're like, yes, like, pop, USA. And that's kind of the vibe here. Although, I mean, everybody else, like progressives, I can hear it right now. It's a warrior ethos. And they're just like so they're ripping families away and tearing up schools and putting babies in cages, you know, but
I was scrolling through my feed the other day, and there's been a few accounts that have been reporting and I air quoted there on the operations with ICE.
Yeah.
And I am not shocked, actually. I was about to say shocked, but it is kind of crazy the amount of either disinformation that you're seeing where, I don't know, playing a video and saying that it was an ICE operation when it actually was police and the person being arrested or the video is old or something along those lines. But I saw this chick that was kind of freaking out about them. And she was like, you know, I'm seeing things with my own eyes, but I would argue that almost every clip that I have seen starts from the moment of arrest.
Yeah.
And not at the moment of like what led to the arrest.
Zero context.
Zero context. Like there's no context about whether or not this person had done something beforehand. They threw something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reports of vehicles chasing ICE officers down the street, boxing them in, blocking them off with the vehicles. And I'm only putting that out there because there's – and I'm probably going to end up writing about this on my Substack. There's been this entire – discussion about empathy, you know what I mean? Like, don't you feel bad or this is horrible or you're heartless if you're celebrating this or if you condone this. But also at the same time, what I'm seeing is an extreme amount of manipulation with these videos that are cut short, don't have context, and people not willing to investigate them more. And I'm not even saying that these videos, that these officers are completely innocent and we can't question them. It's absolutely correct to question whether or not they're doing things constitutionally and operationally correct. Mm-hmm. But most of the videos that we're seeing are like 20 seconds long, and it's literally of just the arrest and nothing before and after. In fact, I saw one where the only thing you saw was the officer coming up to the windshield, breaking the windshield, and the woman screaming because there was a baby in the back seat.
Yeah. So you just,
and so the entire narrative was about the glass and the baby in the back seat.
Yeah.
Correct. However, what they didn't show was that beforehand, the officer is saying the man had been told to pull over. He didn't pull over. So he was chased. The officer approaches. And once he breaks the glass, hears the woman screaming about the baby and comes to the realization that there's a baby, they de-escalate and remove the man from the driver's seat and like try and calm down the situation.
Yeah, but those are two inconvenient facts that are not presented.
Yeah, those two pieces, the beginning and the end, are removed from the video. Like, I had to go digging for the rest of it.
Yep.
So we are in the midst of a propaganda war. And right now, the talking point is that while the president is doing peace abroad, he is bringing war here at home. Yes. Like,
that's
just saw...
what it's going to be.
What was it? What's that?
Jasmine Crockett.
Crockett.
This morning. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what she was saying. I think
And then Gavin Newsom said it, like, there's a war on Latinos, a war on women, a war on institution, a war on California.
Man, I'm getting a double whammy then.
Yeah. There's like all kinds of war everywhere. War in our country. I mean,
yeah,
that's going to be the new talking point, because they can't deconstruct this peace deal thing. Like, it really did happen and everybody saw it. So they can't lie about that. So they're going to have to find some way to twist it. And it's
going to
be...
interested to know what's going to be next. Like, if this peace deal holds, like, with the progressives and stuff, like, what is going to be next? What are they going to cry about next? Like,
They'll stick with the authoritarian thing. They're just going to stick with that. I think that they're so used to it, and it's comfortable for them. And they have all their talking points lined up. They don't have to get creative because...
Did you see, because right now there's supposed to be that No Kings protest coming up
on Saturday.
And did you see what Schumer said? Like, he was actually asked about this or talked about this.
No.
Let me play this clip for you real quick before we wrap it up.
It is just such a hallmark of tyrannical, autocratic, dictatorship societies that they use the prosecutorial department as a political weapon. It is a disgrace, and every American, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, moderate, people should be forcefully rising up against this.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah. So that one was, and then we also have Chris Murphy, because he was talking about, so Letitia James has just been indicted, as if like the previous administration didn't use the DOJ to persecute their opponents.
Tons of people.
Yeah. And so he was talking about that specifically. And then he was bringing up and talking about the protesting and how we need to rise up. And Chris Murphy speaks along those same lines.
Mm-hmm. Have we slipped already into the authoritarianism? Is there a way out? I mean, give us your unvarnished thoughts here.
Well, listen, I mean, we are not on the verge of an authoritarian takeover. We're in the middle of it. Now, it's not too late. We haven't lost our democracy. But, you know, we sometimes like to think of the first term Donald Trump, you know, the bumbling White House that didn't seem to have any theory of the case from day to day. This is a very different White House, right? Stephen Miller and his gang, they have a plan. They have a plan that they are executing to transition our country from democracy to something fundamentally different, maybe even autocracy. And that's what I tried to lay out on the floor today, is how this plan is being operationalized every single day. But no, it is not a lost cause. Ultimately, what we know from history is that when a big enough portion of the population, the number's normally around 2%, show up to protests, are regularly engaged in peaceful civic action, enough sand gets thrown in the gears of the attempt to destroy the democracy that you end up saving it. So we have an opportunity in these elections this November to send a signal. We have an opportunity through the protests on October 18th to show the country and the world that we aren't lying down. So this is a serious moment. It's yet.
Okay, so this is the deal. This is exactly the same thing as how they called him Hitler, still do, called him that forever, but they didn't really believe it. Because obviously, if he was actually Hitler and he was actually doing Hitler-y things everybody would be rising up. Okay. It's exactly the same thing here where he's like, we are in the middle of an authoritarian takeover, but it's not too late. We haven't lost our democracy. Sir, if you're in an authoritarian takeover, democracy is dead. So like you don't really believe it. It's just talking points to scare people.
For those who couldn't see, it said on the Chyron, Trump floats the Insurrection Act, which we've talked about in the last episode where he was specifically asked about it. And what he floating meant was like, well, I could if I wanted to. This man will never get himself in a corner. He will never just say, no, I won't, unless he's like 110% sure that he will not.
Right.
And that freaks people out because specifically what he's being asked about when it regards to the Insurrection Act is when you have Democrat governors who are obstructing and unwilling to enforce federal law.
Yeah, that is insurrection-y. So don't do insurrection-y things if you don't want them talked about. Like, it's all talk. I cannot hear and take those people seriously. If you are legitimately, if you have been in politics for as long as these people have, and you're watching Donald Trump, and you are messaging to the American public that he is an authoritarian and we're in a tyrannical takeover, you are disingenuous. It's just the truth. You're saying things because you're betting people don't understand what you're saying, and they're going to fall in line and vote out of fear. And it's not an authoritarian takeover. I don't know what to tell you.
I think it's just really wild, too, because there's this continued talking point is like, we've never been here before and stuff like this has never happened. And I'm like, that is a bold-faced lie. Right. It has happened before.
There was a lot of authoritarian like action taken with the last administration.
It was just with more finesse.
Right.
It was with more finesse. It wasn't so aggressive. They just don't like the aggressiveness from this administration.
Nervous about these things on Saturday. I know that every time one of these No Kings things comes and goes, it's like, whatever, it wasn't a big deal. It was a nothing burger, right? But I do get nervous for like when these rise up like all over America, and they already did and nothing happened. It was like, wah, wah, wah. But all it takes is one or two things like to pop off in different areas.
Well, and I also think, I mean, I'm a little bit more nervous about it this time, maybe.
Well, because of the law enforcement situation with the government shutdown and people are heightened.
Well, especially since Charlie's assassination there's just been a rise of, and I'm not necessarily saying that the protesters themselves are going to do anything. My concern is agitators.
Yes.
Antifa. After the protests.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Antifa, which doesn't exist, Rachel.
Right. It's not really a thing. It's not defined. I forgot.
I'm like winking my eye to the point of a nervous twitch. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button, whatever platform you're listening to us. We are on YouTube. We're on all major podcast platforms. And our primary platform is Substack, where if you become a paying supporter, you get exclusive content, ad-free episodes, and it's a lot of fun over there. You should go and join us. There's a discount link in the show notes. I always forget how to, I was like, what is that called? Mm-hmm. And then if you would like to subscribe to our independent separate Substacks, shoot us a DM on Substack or on Instagram, and we will share a discount code exclusive for Rivera and Reeves subscribers. Okay, I think that's it.
That's it.
In the meantime, we'll be back on Thursday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. And here's your reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.